the program on this Sunday morning. I'm your host, Brad Siegel. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, and my thanks to our guests in the first half hour of our program today. In the second half hour of our show, we're going to talk about some major changes and, I guess, kind of a major overhaul in the custody laws in Pennsylvania that took effect back towards the end of January of this year. And I guess have really changed the way that custody is now dealt with in Pennsylvania in terms of divorces and the children in that respect. And we haven't done a show on this. It was pointed out to me that these were changed, and I figured, why don't we do something on this and let people know what these changes are and how they affect maybe not only the cases going through the system right now, but the future cases that are out there that will come up with regard to custody. Joining me on the program this morning is Mindy Elgart, and Mindy is an attorney, was doing family law litigation, but now is doing divorce mediation. And I want to talk a little bit about that here this morning in conjunction with the changes in the custody law. So, Mindy, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
It's a pleasure to have you join us. And you come to us from Bucks County?
That's correct.
Where you are involved with divorce mediation there?
Yes, but I also practice in New Jersey, Montgomery County, Lehigh County.
So why the move from family law practice to divorce mediation? Tell us about a little bit about why you moved over to and what the mediation process is all about.
Well, I would say that litigation tends to pit the parties against each other. It doesn't do anybody any good. The process was awful. I saw the most extreme cases of people not working for the best interests of their families. I was hired from a litigation firm into a mediation firm, and I absolutely loved it. It is amazing how beautifully it works, that you can work with people, they can make their own decisions, you educate them on the law, and it's amazing how quickly and how respectfully a case can be settled.
Who decides whether or not they'll go the mediation route?
The parties. Mm-hmm. I mean, in New Jersey, there is a part of the court process where they send the parties to mediation, but what I do is private mediation. The parties just need to agree to walk in the room, and they need to agree to want to work their issues out themselves rather than having judges and lawyers making decisions for them.
Both parties, though, would have to agree to it, right?
Yes.
And is that sometimes a difficult point to get to? If they don't agree on much and that's why they're getting divorced, is it sometimes difficult to get them to the point to agree on this?
Well, certainly when I'm meeting with people, communication is a big issue. There are some people who call me and they're very clear that they're on the same page as far as they want to do what's best for their family. They want to work together and it's not an issue. And just as often I have people call me and say, this is what I really believe in. This is what I want to do. But I don't know if I can get my partner to agree to come into the room with me.
So at that point, do you jump in and try to convince them to go that route, or you don't step in until both parties agree?
I can give them some information on helpful ways or some support about how to talk to their spouse about doing mediation, but it's up to them to make the choice to come in the room. Once they've walked in the room, there really is a great self-selection process, and it does make the process go much more smoothly because they have both voluntarily walked in the room and they want to work it out themselves.
And does it also go a lot more quickly than the divorce route would go?
Extraordinarily quickly, just by the fact that even if they disagree, I have people anywhere who are getting along so well, you don't understand why they're getting divorced, to people who can't stand breathing the same air, but you can still get them to come to an agreement when they have made the decision that's what they want to do. They don't have to be in agreement to go through mediation. That's my job.
To do. And are we starting to see more of this than we've seen in the past? Is this kind of the trend of where we might see this going?
Hopefully. It's a goal of mine to make people aware as much as I can so that if they are going through a divorce, they'll make the decision whether they want to go and fight in the litigation route and spend thousands upon thousands of dollars and spend an ungodly amount of time, or whether they want to work together and get it resolved much more quickly.
So you kind of answered the question there. Was less expensive, too?
It's less expensive, partially because it takes a lot less time. And there are different ways. There are different models for mediation. The model of mediation that I use, I happen to quote a set fee, so before they get started, they know how much the whole process is going to cost as long as they cooperate with the process.
I'm guessing, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the system likes to see this?
As a matter of fact, yes. When I've gone to we all go to continuing legal education. That's required. Mm-hmm. I hear judges very frequently who are sitting on these panels and they say, don't let us make the decisions for your family. We don't know your family members. We don't know who you are. You need to make the decisions for yourselves. You know what you want and what you need. And they are, there's also research that says when you make your own decisions, there's a lot less that goes on down the line as far as enforcement is concerned, because you've been a party to making the agreement. There's much more compliance with the agreement that you've made.
Okay, so judges, I guess, saying that basically they're listening to what they hear in court, making their decisions based on that, and sometimes that can be, there can be a lot of emotion involved in that.
There is a lot of emotion. There's no way that there's a divorce without emotion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of degree, but it's not without emotion.
So this way, it's a good point where they say, you know, you guys figure it out. You know what's best for the family and work it out that way.
Well, I think I want people to be able to have less stress in the process, not have the process be part of the problem. They have enough going on.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as I can do to take the uncertainty out of the process, to let the people who are involved in their own divorce retain control over the process. And when they're in mediation, they are retaining control. They're learning about the law that they need to know in order to make the decisions on the issues that are involved in their case. It's very personalized, too.
Ever get to the point in mediation where the couple decided to go back the other way and not split up?
It does happen, yes. Yeah, I think it's rare because of the fact, remember I was saying there's a self-selection process.
Mm-hmm.
Once they walk in the room, you have a certain type of person who's walking in the room and agreeing on making that decision to try to work together. So I would say in my circumstances, in my experience, it is much more, the great majority of the people are really getting through to the end.
Interesting. So, and custody, does that also is part of the whole mediation process as well, right?
That is part. Now, mm-hmm. I use joint legal custody in all of the mediation cases that I utilize, and that is going, that touches on this new law a little bit, but to not get into that quite yet, what I work on more in the mediation is the parenting time. Who is going to be with the child when? And that's something that's crafted in the mediation process. But joint legal custody is both people having a say in the big picture decisions, the medical decisions, the educational decisions, the religious decisions, the big picture.
Do the kids get a say in that at all? During the mediation process?
I do not have the kids involved in that, and I'm a big proponent of keeping the kids out of it. When I hear people say, oh, the child needed to know, no, the child does not need to know. The child needs to not be a party to this as much as possible, and these adult decisions should be made without putting that child in the middle and not involving them as much as possible.
So is that completely different from if they would go through the litigation process?
There are circumstances in which judges do speak with the children,
mm-hmm.
but it depends, and that's also in the new law as part of the statute. Depending on the maturity of the child and the situation, certainly it's not done for younger children, and you really want to try to avoid putting the child in a position of making a choice, but there are certain circumstances, and certainly more in the litigation process when there is a custody battle, that child would need to be heard from by a judge. But it's not going to be in my mediation process.
Can you distance yourself from what's going on in the room in mediation? I mean, do you get emotionally involved at all at any point?
I would say that I'm always very involved. I don't think that I'm emotionally involved, certainly not the way the parties are, because I've seen a lot of different situations. But if you don't get involved to some degree, then I don't think that you can really actively hear people and come up with creative solutions.
Okay. So the new laws, the new custody laws, January, you said it was kind of the end of January where these took effect in Pennsylvania.
January 23rd, yes.
Why, just by taking a step back and looking at the history of it a little bit, why, well, let's do it this way. Did the laws need to be changed?
Well, I don't think that the laws are changed drastically. I think what was done was there was a uniform statute that was created to apply across the Commonwealth so that things weren't regionally decided and there wasn't a difference between Allegheny County and Bucks County. Now there is a uniform standard, and I think one of the great things about this is people can now see what the court is looking for, and they can guide themselves accordingly and take the high road.
So there were differences based county by county?
I would say probably judge by judge, and these things just weren't codified. They weren't in a statute. It was always a best interest of the child standard, But that's very subjective.
So is the, I guess maybe I'm looking at it, because I know in some divorce cases that they would, filings for divorces would vary from county to county based on how counties handle divorces, right? Custody, the same thing?
I'm not exactly sure.
I mean, in some cases, they would file in different counties where records wouldn't be open. They would be closed or that sort of thing. But that's different with custody, right?
Well, it's there. I mean, it's all based on what the jurisdictional situation is.
There has to be some sort of connection.
And then you're
going to
be placed with the judge that you're going to be placed with, and each judge is different.
So it varied from judge. So who changed the statutes? How do they go? It's the legislature that does that?
That's correct. From what I understand, this new custody change has been in the works for 10 years. And then Rendell signed it in October of 2010, and then it took effect in January.
And how much input do people like you in the family law and divorce mediation business, how much input do you get into what these new laws will look like? Not necessarily you specifically, but your business. Do you get input in that in the legislative process before they start to rewrite the statutes?
I'm really not involved in the legislative process.
Because a lot of times we look at that in criminal law and that sort of thing, and whether they get input. We have lawmakers who are making these statutes that may not necessarily know whether or not they're...
Well, there's
work.
Certainly the sections of the Bar Association that I'm sure lobby the legislature, but I'm not involved in that personally, so I'm not clear on how that process works.
So what are some of the new parts of this that that have taken place?
Well, I would break down four major presumptions that have been written into the law that I think are really progressive and wonderful, and I think are great new strides in the law that are going to make it uniform and make the custody determinations healthier.
Was Pennsylvania in some cases behind
Absolutely.
The curve on some of these?
Yes. This brings Pennsylvania more in line with the rest of the states who are in the 21st century. That's just one of the things that's been commonly said about this statute, that it's bringing us up in line with everybody else. New Jersey already had it. I know you have a listening audience in New Jersey. They have a similar statute.
So ours was archaic.
Well, we just didn't have it. We just really had case law that was making the determination, and now we have a statute.
So you said breaking into four main areas. Break them up for us. What are the biggest areas?
Well, I think one of the wonderful things that that has been written into the statute is that the judge must explain the reasons for his or her decision in open court on the record or in a written decision or order. And one of the values of that is that now people can know where they stand, what is valued, where the court wants them to go, what has been important in their particular case before they could award custody to one party or another, and nobody would have any idea what rhyme or reason the judge had in making that decision.
So they wouldn't have to write an opinion for that. They would just make the decision.
That's correct.
Now they have to actually put it on the record.
The reason for their decision, yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that will helpfully guide people, not only for the case that's at hand, but for people going forward. And that's a lot of what this statute does. It gives people guidance as to what's going to be the right way to behave in order to get custody.
Okay. What else did they do?
Well, there's a presumption now of shared custody. That used to be that there would be the judge would award custody to one party or another, and the presumption of shared custody, I think, is wonderful. It's my personal bent on all this that is really important for each child to have both parents involved, absent an abuse situation.
Mm-hmm.
Children need to have both people care and participate, and this presumption, I think, is really helpful. And I see more and more that people, both parties, really do want that shared custody.
Under the previous way that it was done, was it somewhat tilted towards the mom?
Absolutely.
You saw that?
Yes, and I would say one of the other things I was going to bring up is now there's a presumption of a gender-neutral custody determination, so that would no longer be the case.
So that they couldn't do that?
Well, there was definitely a slant in favor of mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, from my research, even in favor of fathers under certain circumstances with sons. But mm-hmm. now gender is not supposed to have anything to do with the custody determination.
Okay, and that's in this new statute, so not supposed to.
That's a presumption, yes.
Okay, and they wouldn't assume that. So that's supposed to level the playing field a little bit more.
Exactly.
Okay, and the fourth one?
One of the wonderful things that I do, another one of the wonderful things that I think is come about from the statute is that a party can petition the court for a custody determination while they're still under the same roof. It used to be that they had to be under two different residences in order to initiate a custody case. And the problem with that was one person could take the child out of the house, and then you have a status quo that you can argue. The way that the statute's written now, you can file the custody case, the custody decisions can be made that then take effect once the parties are living in two different residences. So everything is settled and nobody can play a litigation game of take the child and run and put that child in the middle. So I think it really is creating a best interest of the child, not just pretending to be in the child's best interest, but mandating it.
And all of this, I mean, all of this was done to more for the best interest of the kids.
Well, it's always the standard that it's in the best interest of the child, but now we're much more clear about what that means.
Okay, and the statute has allowed that to happen.
Yes, I think it's made it clear. I think it's going to create better behavior on the part of parties to custody cases, and it also helps them guide their own behavior, like I was saying earlier, so that they can take the high road and make sure that they're really acting in the best interest of the child and that their actions are going to be rewarded.
Why? And I think one of the things that you were not happy about with all of this is you say this is only for cases going forward, right?
That's correct. Anything that was previously filed that still might be pending, it's not technically applicable to, but I would say that if I was in court and I had something that was along the lines of one of these issues, I would argue that it's the intention of public policy that this is the way the case should be decided, but technically it only applies to new custody cases.
Okay, but you could argue.
I would certainly argue that, yes.
You would do that. How do people get in touch with you? Just, I want to do this a couple of times here this morning for people who want more information about this and what you do. How do they reach you?
Well, the name of my mediation firm is New Hope Divorce Mediation. My website is www.newhopedivorcemediation.com.
That's easy.
Yes, it is easy. If they want to email me, my email address is also very simple, info@newhopedivorcemediation.com.
Okay. Take a little break. We're listening to the Philadelphia Agenda here on 98.1 WOGL. I'm your host, Brad Siegel. We're talking to Mindy Elgarth this morning. She is a family law attorney now doing divorce mediation, and we're talking about the child custody changes here in Pennsylvania, the laws and the new statute that's in effect, went into effect towards the end of January. And I want to remind you that if you miss any part of our program this morning, we also podcast the Philadelphia Agenda now as well. So give us a couple of weeks after it airs on 98.1 FM. It goes up on our website at WOGL.com. Plug in my name, Brad Siegel, in the search box, and we've got many of our previous programs from the Philadelphia Agenda are up there as well. So if you miss any part of this, you'll be able to download it, listen to it again if you want more information about what Mindy is talking about here this morning. And as I said, many of the previous programs are up there as well, so you can avail yourself of that if you want to do that as well. So so those were the four biggest areas of change that occurred in the statutes.
Well, I would say as far as overall overriding presumptions, one of the other big things that is outlined in the statute is 16 specific factors that the judges are supposed to be considering going forward in custody cases.
So, and if we highlight some of those, what are some of the things that they...
Well, I think it's very healthy that one of the best interest factors that is now now dictated by statute is that the party who is more likely to encourage and permit frequent and continuing contact between the child and the other party is the first factor that's actually listed that the court will be considering. So one of the things that I see happen often in litigation is the parties pitting each other and speaking badly about the other party. And that is a huge pet peeve of mine, that you do not speak negatively about the other party to the child. And now the court is recognizing how important it is to encourage contact, encourage a relationship with the other party. So it is a much healthier perspective on divorce, I think, and custody.
In all the years that there have been custody cases going on, why did it take till January of 2011 to do what seems like it would have been common sense?
That would be one of those legislature questions that I really don't know the answer to. I agree with you. It should have been done, and I don't know why it took so long.
I mean, sitting here listening to this and thinking about it, and I know Pennsylvania is very archaic in a number of ways, and not just here, but there's a number of...
I was trying not to say that.
Well, I'll say it. I mean, Pennsylvania's got a lot of backwards laws, and if anybody wants to challenge it, we can do that. But I'm just sitting here thinking common sense-wise that why now? I mean... It should have been done years ago.
I agree with you. I don't know why not. I'm glad it's been done now. I don't know who was fighting with what in the legislature to maybe they were fighting over exactly what it should be, why it took 10 years. I don't know.
Yeah, and these are not even money issues.
No, that right. I mean, and that's usually what it's all about.
Yeah, there's no spending involved in any of this.
Well, there is. There's certainly a lot of spending when you have a custody battle,
well,
that's for sure.
But that's not state spending. That's not state money.
That's right.
So that's why I'm just sitting. I just wanted to throw that out there because I'm sitting listening to you talk about this going, why and why now and why did it take 10 years?
I don't know the answer
to
that.
But in addition, you talk about these factors and the best interest factors and they lay this out. So a lot of this, the judge now has a more clear avenue of how these are supposed to fall out. Is it taking some of the, are these now, these factors and these, everything in this, somehow taking some of the onus away from the judge in these cases now because it's more clear in which direction they can go?
I think it does make their decision making easier.
Easier,
I can
right?
easily see, and I'm sure that the way these court cases, of course, there isn't any precedent yet, mm-hmm. but I'm sure that the way these court cases are going to be written is the judge is going to address each one of the factors and delineate their opinion on that particular case relative to these factors. So they're going to say this isn't, and of course you'll know halfway through or after a couple of them which way the judge is going to turn, but they're going to list each of the factors and they're going to explain their opinion on it, and that's why they made the custody decision. And I think it makes it easier for them as far as an appeal situation is concerned as well.
So these are still open for appeal even after the
well,
decision.
Nobody's even tested anything
so
yet.
So nothing's happened.
And everything's open for appeal because that's one of the problems with litigation, because even the winner is in some ways the loser, because when you walk out of court and you feel like you've won the case, the other side can always appeal. So that's one of those reasons that the litigation mm-hmm. cases can go on and on and on, and there's not a conclusion, and that's not good for the family either.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the other best interest factors that that are out there in this?
Well, going hand in hand with the one I already mentioned, it's that the legislature is specifically addressing that problem of a parent trying to turn a child against the other parent. So going hand in hand with encouraging the relationship between the child and the other parent. Also, they want to make sure that party to custody. If you want custody, you better not be playing that game of turning the child against the other parent. And I see that even in the mediation world, and I hear parties say, oh, they had to know. No, the child does not have to know. This is an adult issue. The child should not be involved in this and not be in the middle any way, shape, or form.
And we were talking child, but this is plural. This is children. And,
absolutely.
And they don't split, do they, kids? I mean, does that ever...
It does happen.
It does?
One of the things that is one of the other factors is the sibling relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not saying you have to keep the children together. It's part... Mm-hmm. One of the factors that's considered is the sibling relationship. Mm-hmm. And that may not always be that they should be together.
Mm-hmm.
Each case is an individual case. I would say as a general rule, you would want siblings to be with each other, but that's certainly not definitive.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit, and one of the the notes that you had put together about the criminal offenses, it expands the types of crimes that would create an issue here?
Yes, it does. The crimes used to be more along the lines of the large, huge felony type crimes mm-hmm. that would be logical. Now they've added DUI and driving under the influence of alcohol or a controlled substance.
So things that could affect the safety of the child.
Which could affect the safety of the child, but is not necessarily, according to my research, always the best choice for the child.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who may have a DUI may not always be the best parent for the child, but it is a consideration. It's something that in my mediations, when I draft an agreement, if there is somebody who's had a history and one of the parties brings that up, I always draft into the agreement that they should never, ever drive under the influence of anything. And that would be something that if that was ever discovered, that would change the situation. But you need to give the party, unless there's a severe case, the opportunity to be sober and take care of their children. Of course, like I said, it's a case-by-case basis, and if somebody can't control it, then that would be a different situation.
And what about the factors, the rights of grandparents, that sort of thing? How does that play into this?
Well, that's certainly been codified and explained as well. It's explained as far as standing, how the grandparents can... they are now allowed to ask the court for custody. There are certain circumstances. If one of the parents is deceased, once the parents have been separated for more than 6 months or a divorce proceeding is pending, or if the child has lived with the grandparents and been sent by the parents to live with the grandparents, these are different circumstances under which the grandparent has standing or the right to go to court and ask for custody.
Okay, and that's all been cleared up as well.
Yes, that was not part of the law before. It was much harder. It was very hard for grandparents to go to court and get this. The presumption was, and it still is, that there should be a parent-child relationship over a grandparent relationship, but there are more rights for grandparents now as well.
And what about relocation?
That's another circumstance that was addressed by the court. Relocation is only allowed if it is consensual by the parties or permitted by the court. So what I mean by that is if one of the parties, say the party with primary physical custody, wants to move away, they can't just go. If the parties don't agree on it, there are certain factors and standards that have now been outlined by the court that the court can consider, similar to the custody determination, to make a decision about whether that party can move away with the child and or children, and whether the party who's not moving away may be considered the primary parent if it's in the best interest of the child to remain in the school district. There are several different factors that are outlined on the relocation issue as well.
So at what point, Mindy, do we know whether or not what they've done here works?
Well, for the most part, it's going to be a work in progress, yes. But for the most part, I don't see how it can be a negative.
Okay.
I don't see how that's possible. I think that having a more clear guide for the courts, for the lawyers, for the litigants, or the parents to know what is valued, to have this information here that's encouraging the high road to not be speaking ill of the other parent and things like that. I just don't see how it can be a negative.
Doing this as long as you have, is there anything that they didn't address that you would have liked to have seen them take up with this?
I didn't think about that. like I said, one of my biggest issues is parents involving the children. So the court certainly touches on that when they say encouraging the other relationship, not bad talking, not speaking ill of the other party. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether I would add. I don't know that you can prescribe parties not involving their children in the divorce process, but I think that is a huge detriment. There's just no good that can come from that. And keeping the adult issues adult under every circumstance, really.
But overall, it took them a long time to get here, but they finally got here.